No.
Chinatown.
Nah, that's like one more block south than I want to go.
Sir, those are actual ghosts flying around.
And a class 5 floating vapors. Nothing to worry about.
No, it's important. Don't you see what's happening?
Look, I don't go to Chinatown. I don't drive wackos, and I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
I get my gear.
Fuck you, Dan Aykroyd. Fuck you. Oh, yes.
Darkness, my old friend, I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping, and the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound. Silent streams I walk alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, beneath the halo of a street lamp, I turn my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stared by the flash of a neon light that split the night. Touch the sound of silence.
I can see one going on.
And in the naked light I saw.
I just.
10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking. People hearing without listening. People writing songs that voices.
I fucked up. Oh, whatever.
Doesn't even matter. Nothing matters anymore, Brett.
The sound of silence.
Ow, ah, ah, ah.
Fool said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer.
I'm kind of worried because
we live in a world where there's a Ghostbusters remake. Nothing matters.
Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words, like silent raindrops, fell and echoed.
He's dead! He's fucking dead! Look what you did, Paul Feig! You killed him! You killed them all! You Baxter! Stella!
And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway wall.
Die, you animal scum!
Oh, my God.
Our childhoods aren't dead enough yet. And with that, we enter a very special episode of Two Angry Guys.
An episode that has been just about a year and a half in the making.
Pretty much, yeah. This is a long time coming, to say the least. I can't believe this day has come. But
I'm sniffling from all the tears, not from the allergies.
Fuck, man. So we went to go see Paul Feig's Ghostbusters reboot remake. Which apparently now is subtitled "Answer the Call." Like, that's officially part of the title now.
I thought maybe that was just like a like.
I thought it was a tagline, but apparently they changed it. I guess they. Do you remember when that movie Edge of Tomorrow came out, and everyone thought the name of the movie was "Live, Die, Repeat"?
Yeah,
like that's the same thing that happened. Like after the movie came out, because so many people started thinking the name of it was "Live, Die, Repeat," they made that the title. They made "Live, Die, Repeat." Edge of Tomorrow became the title, and in this case, because the stupid tagline was "Answer the Call,"
yeah,
And people confuse them on the positioning on the posters. It ends up being renamed. And
I just
Ghostbusters.
Sorry to interrupt. I just want to let you know, as of an hour ago, Friday box office for Ghostbusters was $17.2 million.
That's maybe, but you know what? Maybe what that'll end up being is like after word of mouth gets out that it's a fucking steaming pile of shit.
It said, and I think did they do midnight showings?
No, but they started 7 o'clock showing.
Okay,
so that's
yeah, because
thing.
It said within its first night. It could, this was from 19 hours ago. It said Ghostbusters earned 3.5 on its first night in theaters. But then, like I said, as
a Thursday night, yeah.
As of an hour ago, it's in the lead with $17.2 million.
It's on track to probably hit like 50, I think, if it continues the way it seems to be.
And 74% freshness rating and a 51% for audience score.
That's not good. If the audience score is dropping that low, that's actually not good. Wow. I don't even know where to begin. So, you know, we had this long lead up. We've discussed like every single thing that's happened over the last year and a half, from the casting to the script rumors, you know, the costumes, the every single thing that came out, we've discussed. And you know, it finally opened this fucking weekend, and I said to you, like, from the beginning, I'm like, we have to go see this. No matter how much it's going to hurt to do it, we have to see it for just to feel, like, vindicated or vilified, because it could have went either way.
Yeah, it could have.
I mean, when the reviews started hitting, and they were coming out mostly positive, you know, it started kind of shaking me. I'm like, oh, shit, am I going to get proven wrong and be made to look like a complete asshole?
I know, you know, because I just know how much that would have killed you.
Yeah, to suck up my pride and say it was a good movie would have fucking killed me. But I would have done it if it was actually a good movie. Thankfully, and I really appreciate this, because we made that thing on the episode we recorded earlier this week where if we ended up liking the movie, we were going to have to read the entire book on YouTube. But thankfully, we don't have to do that because, as you would have possibly guessed, the movie is, I would say it's far worse than Spy, which we sat through.
Yeah, because at least when we watched Spy,
I think there was a couple laughs, actually, which kind of surprised the both of us.
Yeah, there were some parts where I actually, like, it was a genuine laugh when we watched Spy.
At least for us, I mean, the theater wasn't too crowded because we went early.
I was surprised, though, for an 11:30 showing. There was probably at least maybe
20 people.
30 tops.
Maybe top 30, but in a pretty big theater. The theater probably holds like 400.
Yeah.
That theater. So, I mean, we went in and...
Didn't pay for it, though.
No, we paid for Independence Day. We gave Independence Day our money because I said all along, I am not giving this movie my money. So we picked out, like, we literally went through the kiosk thing, and, like, we're just looking, like, what's the other movie that's playing at the same time? Oh, Independence Day, perfect.
Yeah, it was like an $11.35. Yeah. It only cost us $11.
Yeah, matinee price. That's you, matinee. By the way, if you're outside of New York, a matinee price for a movie is $11.
Except from the theater around the block from where I live, their matinee prices are $7.
That's pretty good. But that's also, like, a really low-end theater.
Yeah.
It's like a no-frills, like... You know, ghetto theater.
No frills, like it's a fucking like brothel or something like that. It's like it's like one of those strip clubs where they like where they go full nude.
It's a dingy theater. It's a little dingy. It's old. I mean, last time there was a fucking Jolly Rancher or something on the screen the whole time. Like I was like staring at the screen and there was just like a Jolly Rancher in the center of it. Like someone threw it. Like we went to see Ninja Turtles.
Really?
Yeah, I noticed in the corner of the screen it was just like someone threw. Well, it was either that or gum.
It's
like,
funny
somebody
because
threw it at the screen. And it stuck.
When Phantom Menace came out, me and my cousins went to go see the movie there, and we saw Phantom Menace like three times. And the second time we almost got kicked out because what we were doing we'd buy the big bag of remember the Starburst hard candies?
Yeah.
We'd put them in our mouth, wet them up, and then throw them at the screen.
Oh, it's probably your candy then.
Yeah, it was probably still my candy from 1998.
Fuck.
Yeah. Anyway.
But I don't want to get too sidetracked. Yeah. But anyway. So, yeah. I mean, there is people laughing throughout the whole movie. And me and Brett were staring at each other like, what the fuck is so funny?
At first, it was just that
it was one
woman.
Lady.
It was that one
it
woman.
It was one lady.
She's like, ah!
Every stupid little line was getting a laugh out of this lady. Like either she must have been on fucking, she must have been high on something, yep. Which could or like maybe she was drugged out.
I really regret turning down those edibles before I left.
Mm.
Fuck, that would have probably helped us.
Yeah.
Look, it was a very long time ago, and it was just a gag between a couple of friends. Sorry. a 460-page gag. First sentence is, this is not a joke.
What do you want?
Well, I'm Ed Milgrave. I'm the historian of the Eldridge Mansion.
There's a lady laughing and I'm getting uncomfortable.
If you could just come take a look.
Look, I mean, we both said, like, we would give it a chance. And within, what, the first 5 minutes of the movie, I knew what we were in for. Because the first five minutes of the movie, it opens up with the guy from Silicon Valley.
Yeah. Like the Gabe from The Office.
Right. So it opens on the scene with him, and, like, it's done really cartoony. Like, it starts off okay.
Is it me, or was it shot really, really dark where your eyes were hurting?
I wasn't having that problem.
Yeah, my eyes
I actually had the opposite problem where the lighting on the sets made everything look too fake. But we'll get into that. So the movie opens up with Gabe from The Office, and it starts okay. Like, it's setting up this scene where, like, he's, like, telling a story about, like, a murder in this mansion. And then, like, he does this, like, this thing where the candlestick falls over, and then it comes back and it reveals, like, he had, like, a switch in his pocket to make it, like, fall off the table. And then, like, all of a sudden, the door opens up, and then he's getting chased around the house by something. And then he walks into this, like, basement, and all of a sudden the floor is glowing, like, green. Like,
and it's ooze starts bubbling up.
Yeah, it comes up bubbling out of the floor.
Within the cracks.
Right. And then it, like, it looks like he's going to die because the staircase collapses under him, and he's screaming.
And as that scene's happening, you slowly hear the...
Yeah, you hear the Ray Parker Ghostbusters start to kick in under it. By the way, there's like 10 different versions of the Ghostbusters theme in this movie.
And luckily, they only use the original version...
In the opening...
Much similar to the original version. Understandable.
It's going to be a long couple hours.
By the way, you missed it because you went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
There is a scene where the Ray Parker theme song, like, kind of kicks in for another show called Ghost Jumpers.
I heard that as I was leaving.
Yeah,
Are you going to call Ghost Jumpers?
Who are you going to call Ghost Jumpers? And I'm like, I just groaned out loud because you weren't there. By the way, there is audio. We did record audio of our entire experience. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it, and I'll probably insert it throughout this episode. But you're going to be able to hear
our
reactions.
The original plan was to film our reactions. Unfortunately, we were sitting a little too far back.
We were too far
back
from the screen, so we weren't getting the glow off,
but
so you couldn't really see our faces.
You get great sound of our reaction, the movie itself, and then also there were two people sitting behind us. My problem with that was, like, the guy
was laughing at really terrible things.
Yeah,
he was laughing at, like, jokes that weren't even jokes.
Yeah, that was, and they sounded very forced.
Yeah,
yeah,
like that kind of, like, laugh,
and then fucking geeking out when, you know,
anytime the cameos show up,
which we'll get through, because, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you have a drink or something hand, because we are going through the whole movie. This is going to be quite the ride.
It's gonna be intense here.
And just movie. Clocked in at about a little
just
closer,
under 2 hours.
Just under 2 hours.
I want to say like an hour 55 probably.
Yeah.
So yeah, the movie opens up and then it goes into the credits, and then it introduces Kristen Wiig's character, who's teaching at
Columbia.
I thought it was Princeton. Is it Columbia? All right, maybe I missed that, but anyway, it doesn't really matter. Because out of nowhere, like, they kind of just bring her character, and of course, because they want to introduce her character as Goofy, she's teaching to an empty classroom. Like, she's practicing teaching in front of an empty classroom. And then another guy walks out. I don't know what he was. He wasn't the dean.
No. He was the guy who was in charge of the haunted house.
Then why was he asking her about the book?
Because he wanted to find out if the book was legit or not.
Oh,
he wanted
okay.
to find out, like, is this you? Like, do you really believe these things? Like, because he came to her so she could go and look at the or if she knew anybody that could, you know, go to the house.
But I don't remember him asking that. That was something that caught me right away. So they show the scene where he comes in with the book, and then the whole scene is her like, finding out this book even exists.
Yeah, he's like, is this yours? She goes, no. He's like, but that looks like you. Oh, it does. But, you know, I thought I only burned both copies. And he says, oh, no, you can buy them all over Amazon.
Right. Oh, by the way, the fucking product placement in this movie is a drinking game worthy.
Amazon was the one that we missed.
Yeah, that was an early one. Also, YouTube. YouTube was a big one, too.
Amazon, YouTube, Reddit, Pringles, Papa John's. Which, did you see the Papa John's commercial?
No, I haven't.
Oh, yeah, there's an actual... Yeah,
that's not surprising.
Yeah.
And then there's more than that. It just continues on and on.
7-Eleven?
7-Eleven. And there's a bunch when they do the Times Square scene at the end. Yeah. There's,
anyway,
there's a ton.
Yeah, so that was the thing. Like, he's asking her if this book is real and if it's really her and if she knows anybody. And then
it cuts to her in the dean's office.
Yeah.
And then he's asking
her
about
it. Who was played by, I don't know what his character is on Game of Thrones. I know him as the bad guy from the last action hero movie.
Right, the red eye.
This was a 360.
He finds out about this book and she's denying, like, oh, it's, you know, it's my friend that she wrote it, this blah blah blah. And then it cuts back and, like, they go to introduce Melissa McCarthy's character and McKinnon.
Yeah.
And they're at some lab in a school.
In the high school where she works.
Yeah. No, it was a college. It was another college. And, you know, she's being, like, I guess the inventor type with McKinnon. Like, they're testing out stuff. And then she's like, and there's this whole weird scene where she's, like, complaining about wontons.
Poorly. You put our book online without my permission. I don't need your permission.
Of course you need my permission. I wrote that book with you. My name is on it.
No, absolutely not. That book is a whole new revenue stream for me. And I'm like 1/10 away from getting a new mini fridge in here.
Look, I am up for tenure right now.
Ooh, I'm up for tenure.
And if my colleagues at Columbia University Google my name, that is the first thing that comes up. Along with a ghost emoji now, thank you very much, that does a little dance.
You know what? That book was our baby. And you abandoned that baby before it even learned to fly.
Okay, well, books can't fly, and neither can babies, so.
You don't know? I'll tell you what, if I had a human baby that could fly, I wouldn't be telling the press about it. If I had a flying baby, I'd zip this, and so would you.
There is no
excuse
for anything in that book. And it makes me look like a crazy person.
God, are you kidding me?
What?
I got one wonton. I got a tub of soup, and I got one split wonton. Look at that, just floating there.
I'm sorry you're having a soup crisis right now.
There's not even any meat in there. That's just a carrot.
Abby, please.
Holy fuck.
Abby, you're killing me. I got one wonton again. You got to send Benny back.
And like, people were laughing at this, and I'm just like, why is this funny? Why? And like, it went on for like 3 minutes, the scene about her not getting wontons, and like, I wasn't finding it funny. I didn't understand what the joke was and why people were laughing.
Because it's a big container and there's only one wonton
and
that's cut in half.
And that's
John.
Laugh out loud funny.
That is side splitting laughter.
But it went on. It went on way too long. Much, much, much like this podcast will probably go on way too long.
Oh my god! Yeah, I got other shit to do, but you know.
Yeah. So then McKinnon's character gets introduced, and like right off the bat, I'm getting like Jim Carrey vibes. I said immediately, like, when her introduction, like, I'm the Riddler, because she walks over and she has like this weird, like, very over the top comic book walk, like she struts over, and it's like, and you'll notice that throughout the rest of the movie. She's just in that mode. Like, she's if this had been a male version of the Ghostbusters, that character would have been played by 90s Jim Carrey. It's the same fucking deal. Overdone facial expressions, just like the weird voices she's doing. Like, just I know you enjoyed it, but for me it wasn't working because it didn't feel like a real person.
Yeah, and the over-the-topness of her character kind of made sense.
It's entertaining to a degree, but it's also like she's in a different movie. It's like she's a character out of a different movie.
Yeah. But it also makes sense when somebody said that it seems like she's playing, like, she's...
Oh, it was SNL on... Yeah, it was like an SNL bit character. And, you know, here's the thing. When you look at the comedy in the original Ghostbusters, right... Everything feels sort of realistic. All the people, feels sort of
realistic.
It feels
natural. It feels realistic and it feels natural.
Right.
And I feel like the bit that they had right when Melissa McCarthy's character and Kristen Wiig's character first see each other again, it felt so forced.
Yeah.
And this will become a recurring theme talking throughout this movie, but my one problem with the whole movie overall is that they just, if there was one thing that was missing, it was the simplicity of the original Ghostbusters film.
Everything was over the top. The comedy, the action scenes, everything was over the top. Because, like, I actually found Red Letter Media, they did, like, a review of the first Ghostbusters, and in it, do you know how many seconds of screen time the proton packs get used for in the original Ghostbusters movie?
How much?
It's like a minute and 40 seconds.
And what is it in this one?
I think it's probably close to like 6 minutes.
Wow.
Of them just using the proton streams. And there's a major problem right off the bat.
Oh my God. And that's within like the first half hour of the movie.
Yeah, we'll get there. So as this evolves here,
be a long night.
Oh fuck yeah! So as this keeps going, you keep getting introduced to the characters, and then they go to the mansion, and you get that big scene from the trailer. Where the ghost vomits all over her.
And, it was everywhere and every crack.
Yeah, that whole. Oh God, we're gonna have to use the fucking douche bell from now on. Every time there was a douchey moment in the movie, you're gonna hit the bell.
Okay.
Okay. So
maybe just make sure it works.
Good enough.
Okay.
So here, put it on this. This will make it work better. There you go. So they go to the mansion. You get that scene from the credits of the ghost vomiting on her, and then it's like they go outside and they're filming it, and it cuts back, and like you see it, it's now being watched as a YouTube video by the dean, and he fires her, and. Then there's, like, this scene where she's, like, walking out of the school and, like, she's being fired. But she's like, I'm not getting fired. I'm just moving my office.
They found, I think the joke she made, they found cats in the wall.
Yeah.
Moving offices. Found a couple cats in the wall. Really stuck in there. Glad I'm getting out. I didn't get fired.
Thank you. Yeah. And then she goes over to start working with Melissa McCarthy. So, by the way, I don't want to gloss over this whole thing. So the whole setup for the beginning.
Do this instead.
Okay, that's a little much, but
just like that movie.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I want to get into this because it seems like it's actually going to be a big plot point, but it ends up not being anything. So the whole setup for the movie is like when she finds out that. When Kristen Wiig's character finds out that Melissa McCarthy wrote and released this book, she gets like really pissed off and goes off on her like, "Why did you release the book? That's my name is on the book too, and this is going to cause my career and this and that." And it feels like these are two characters who had some kind of a falling out, but like not even 10 minutes later, they're not even addressing that anymore. It's like they're best friends again. Everything's fine. Like it's never really explained why there seems to be a rift.
What happened to break it apart? It's just like,
not even that. She loses her job. She loses her job at the university, and then's like everything's fine. We're gonna work together now. Everything's cool. Like that's kind of strange writing. Like, shouldn't she be pissed at her? That's the thing. There's no conflict. There's no conflict within the characters.
Can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Can you put those scissors down?
Oh, sorry. I'm getting ready to use them as a weapon. I might just stab into
not
my...
Not on me, on
in,
yourself.
No, into my arm. Just carve... No. Fuck you, Paul Feig, right in my fucking arm. Yeah, so there's no conflict between the characters because whatever they were trying to set up disappears in the first 15 minutes of the movie. And then we move on, and they introduce both the villain and Leslie Jones' character,
which you missed because you went
to go take a piss or whatever. Which I don't blame you.
I went to go pee. I got some popcorn.
Yeah. So basically, it wasn't much of a scene, but like, you know what? I just completely glossed over the fucking point I was trying to make earlier. So back at the mansion, when they first get to the mansion, there's two things that threw me off. One. the guy that's in the original opening scene, the Gabe from The Office, is alive and seemingly unharmed, which is completely, again, unexplained. Especially when he says the line, like, you're gonna die in there. Because, like, if they were gonna die in there, why are you alive? No?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't really think about that until now.
All right, so that's something I wanted to point out, because the editing in this movie is really bad. That's
not as bad as Batman vs. Superman, though.
Not quite as bad as Batman vs. Superman. It's pretty fucking bad. So then they introduce Leslie Jones' character, who's working in the toll booth, and they do this weird thing where, like, she's in the toll booth, and she keeps trying to talk to people, like, outside the booth.
Hey, how you doing, sir? I got Metro. Hey, that's a dope jacket, man. I got that jacket. You know what? It's a sweater. I made a mistake. Have a good day.
Like, right. She's like trying to say hello to people that are like walking past going to work and shit. And it's really kind of weird because if you ever lived in New York City or you're any probably major city where they have the booths, those people are like so busy not paying attention to anybody. They're not sitting there trying to make friends with everyone walking by. So
is that what your problem is, John? How unrealistic the toll booth person in the train station is?
No, but it was a point that like her character just felt like really an odd thing to do for the character, because that's just not something that would happen. Now, this whole movie is things that wouldn't happen, but that's the whole thing though. Ghostbusters, the original Ghostbusters, still establishes that it's in the same world and reality that we all live in, like.
This brought in, like, different dimensions and parallel.
Well, not even that much, but, like, just the way human beings react to each other is not on a realistic level. Like, the interaction between the characters didn't feel like it was in the same fucking plane of reality that we live in. You know, whereas in the original, it's like this could be in our you know, this could be a story that happens in our world, because these people feel real. These people don't feel like, you know, a bunch of tropes and character elements that are being fed for, you know, simplicity's sake. Anyway, so the Rowan guy shows up and he's like,
he's like a concierge at a hotel.
Or a janitor. I think he's whatever. But he shows up at the booth and he's like,
they are walking sewage, concerned only with their own trivial matters.
Okay.
When the fourth cataclysm begins, laborers such as yourself will be among the last led to the butchery. So, make the most of your extra time.
You are just a bundle of joy, ain't you?
Which is, I mean, there's two things here. First of all, the fourth cataclysm thing is a cool reference, because it's a reference to the original Ghostbusters. But when they start establishing Rowan as a character, he doesn't really have much of a character arc. He's just like this weird dude who's building ghost machines. Like they try later in the movie to kind of establish why he's doing it, but the reason is so fucking weak. It's just like, eh. Anyway, so Leslie Jones follows him into the subway, and then she sees him like she sees a ghost.
The second major ghost.
The
movie.
Which is a
prisoner.
Prisoner who's died in the electric chair. So she sees that, and then I guess they now go back to the Kristen Wiig and the Ghostbusters, who aren't yet Ghostbusters. But now they're at they go looking for a place to set up shop, basically.
Yeah.
And you get the first appearance of the firehouse in the movie. And it's like the real estate agent's like, oh, this is like
$21,000 a month.
And they're like, we can't afford that. And then like, we'll go to this Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, she's like, do you have anything against the smell of Chinese food?
Yeah.
And then it turns out to be that they're living above the Chinese food place that Melissa McCarthy always answers from. Yeah. And like the first second you're there,
she's getting food.
She's getting food, and she's arguing to the guy
about
why it took an hour to get up.
By the way, the wonton thing is a running thing throughout the whole movie.
Except that time, it's because of she orders like the sweet and sour, hot and spicy shrimp soup.
Yeah, and there's only one shrimp instead.
Yeah,
yeah, because that's the joke.
Someone's
dancing.
Let's be safe, though.
Oh wait, you're filming.
Oh my
my god, it's like a scene out of a fucking 80s girls movie. Like a fucking, they're doing the fucking dance scene. Like a girl dancing her bedroom scene? That's what's happening right now.
Thank you. Hate to debarge in. Is that by DeBarge? I thought it was Devo. Anyway, I got
to keep doing. When the first joke fails, you keep going for it.
You just change it up a little bit.
Yeah. So.
So, yeah, after that is when they bring in Chris Hemsworth's character.
Right. He came in actually a lot faster than I expected.
Yeah.
It just kind of like, hey, they get the Chinese restaurant, and then next thing you know, they're already hiring the secretary. And again, this going to my point of the characters not feeling like real people, he's so overly dumb.
Oh my god, yeah.
That it feels like a person who wouldn't be able to function in the, let alone be able to like do anything. Like, he's wearing glasses, but they don't have lenses. He's so stupid when like they tell him to cover his ear, when he tells him to don't listen, he covers his eyes.
Yeah.
Like, it's stupid where it's almost funny, but like it again breaks any kind of reality of like these could be real people. Because look, you could find autistic kids or genuine like kids with Down syndrome who would understand the concept of covering their fucking ears when you tell them not to listen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh well, lots of different jobs. I did the actor thing. Worked
just
for
just real quick. Can I ask why no glass?
Oh yeah, they just kept getting dirty. So I took them out. Don't have to clean them anymore.
Yeah, I gotta try to keep that in mind.
Would it be okay if I bring my cat to work sometimes? He has major anxiety problems.
You know what? I would love to let your cat live here with you, but I have a pretty severe cat allergy.
No, I don't have a cat. It's a dog. His name's my cat.
Your dog's name is my cat?
And Mike Hat.
Your dog's name is Mike, last name Hat.
Well, his full name is Michael Hat.
I can't say that I'm allergic to dogs, so...
Yeah, that's all right. It is with my mom.
Well, then we have that figured out.
Like, this is a level of dumb where it almost feels like a stance against men. Like, we have to have the dumbest man ever on film in this movie.
That seems like a very subtle, underlying tone throughout the movie.
Yeah, there's definitely an underlying tone of, like, men are stupid. And at one point, especially at the end, there's even, like, a line that's like, safety lights are for men. The Sigourney Weaver cameo.
Spoiler,
which is basically in the end credits sequence. It's like it's part of the end credits, but like there's that theme throughout the whole movie where as men are shown as being like really fucking dumb, like even every male. I think it's every male character, the mayor,
yeah.
Chris Hemsworth, not Chris. Chris Hemsworth. I almost said the other one, the other Hemsworth, Liam Hemsworth, but Chris.
Bill Murray.
Bill Murray again gets to be pretty dumb.
Who has a lot of screen time, not a lot, but
he has like 3 minutes.
But he has more, like three solid minutes. He has more than any of the other big cameos in the movie.
Yeah.
So they bring him in and they hire him, and then
they hire him because not because he showed them any reason to hire them, because Kristen Wiig wants to fuck him.
Yeah, pretty
That's
much.
That's pretty much the only reason. Which is, by the way, that in itself is sexism. And it, and there's some kind of weird irony that's not being carried over here. It's like the act of hiring somebody, you would, if it was the other way around, right? If this was a movie, a male Ghostbusters movie, and they hired, let's say, like, who's a really hot actress?
Megan
right now?
Fox.
If Megan Fox showed up and she was playing a really dumb character, but they only hired her for her being hot, you know the fucking the feminists who would be losing their mind over, like, you're glorifying and objectifying women, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, they're doing the same fucking thing just to a man.
Yeah, pretty
And
much.
All they do is keep complimenting his fucking body.
Yeah.
That's literally the thing that just happens. Like, they hire him because he's fucking attractive, and then all they keep doing is complimenting how fucking attractive he is.
Yeah, Kristen Wiig touching him or, like, finding, like, saying things like, oh, I hope you didn't hurt your face. Like, is your beautiful face okay?
Yeah.
So right after that happens is then when he tells them, oh, you have a guest. And they and they're like, oh, if you're here for takeout, it's downstairs, because they assume that she was sitting there and she was getting there for
Right. We're talking about Leslie Jones now.
Yeah.
Now, Leslie Jones shows up and tells them about the subway, and then they take a trip with her to the subway to go see the ghost. Now, this sequence is really interesting because...
But you need to talk about what happens before that.
I will. We'll get... I want to tie that in after the fact, because I want to spend some time on this. So this is the first time they actually go and try to catch a ghost. And they... McKinnon and Kristen Wiig and... what the fuck's in the
whole gang.
The whole gang. They go into the subway, and you know they're trying to find the prisoner ghost, and they have this really like she's got this trolley with her. McKinnon's got this trolley with her that has basically like a prototype of the proton pack on it, and you know they're going into the subway with this thing trying to catch a ghost, and like they're like, oh, we've never used it before, so we don't know what's going
to
happen.
You also forgot to mention the PKE meter. How ridiculous the PKE meter looks.
Oh yeah, you said it looked like one of those toys they sell at like carnivals.
Where like where you press it, like you press it
and
it opens
like
the up
lights and
the
light spins. Yeah, that's exactly what it all the gadgets looked really shitty to me.
They looked really like I can understand where they're going, like that route they're going. It's very DIY.
Yeah, I mean, but so was the original.
I'm just saying, though.
I mean, all the gadgets in the original were built by fucking Ray and yeah. Egon, and they all had like there was like a finesse to them. You know what I mean? There was like there's a style to them. These have no style. They're just blocky items.
Yeah.
They're very just generic looking. Anyway, so this gives us our first proton test, which of course like they do a limp dick joke basically.
Yes.
She tries to use the proton pack and it like goes limp.
Yeah.
And then like
she did get some laughs, got some of those.
Yeah, it's funny cuz I don't know. And then that brings us to the other part of the subway sequence, which is the origin of the Ghostbusters logo.
Yes.
Now earlier when they ask him to like show him a bunch, because apparently they say he's like a web designer
he's
or something, graphic designer.
Yeah, graphic web designer.
And like, he shows them the logos, which if you've seen one of the trailers, like the big boob ghost logo.
Yeah.
And in that sequence, you also get the fucking random 7-Eleven.
7-Eleven, you get one of a hot dog above a house, and he's
right.
Like, oh, it's because, you know.
The hot dog's haunting the house.
The hot dog's haunting the house, and then there was another one.
It was like clip art. It was
yeah,
just,
it was really, yeah. really weird.
Like, and again, people were laughing at this, and I'm just like, I don't really, okay, whatever. So anyway, back they in the subway, they now see the logo, like a street artist is spray painting the logo in front of them.
Yeah, they ask them what the ghost looked like, and he starts spraying it, and Leslie Jones like, don't you do it, and he goes, she's like, I don't want that here, so you can tell that he finishes the ghost, and then, but you're not seeing it, and she goes, I don't want that, he goes, oh, what?
Oh,
what?
No ghost
allowed? Okay, and
he
puts
the red circle with the cross.
You see him do the motion with his hand, because they're not showing the camera.
There's a name for that thing, I never remember what
yeah.
it's called.
And then, he walks away, and you see the logo.
And they do the reveal of the logo.
And McKinnon takes it, and she takes a picture of it.
And she's like, that'll be a good logo.
Yeah.
So that's how the Ghostbusters logo comes. It's just randomly drawn by a fucking graffiti artist. And then stolen. Yeah, where do we go from here? So I think the next thing after that is they get the car.
Well, after that is the video.
Oh, right. So they introduce this thing throughout the movie where they keep videotaping these events and, like, on YouTube and whatever, like, people are making fun of them and saying, like, it looks fake, this looks terrible. Basically everything that people have said about the real movie.
We need to be more mobile. I know what to do.
I almost got killed.
Yeah, I know. It was so awesome. It was awesome.
I wish I was dead.
Everyone thinks this video is fake. Look at these comments. We have to bring a ghost back to this lab and document it, you guys. I mean, this stuff is real. We have to be able to prove it.
We will, and you shouldn't be
the
reading this
false.
Stuff. You're not supposed to listen to what crazy people write in the middle of the night online. Look at the bogus equipment. You know what? I'd love you to meet me any place, any time.
And it's almost like it's an inner commentary. And they say, like, oh, don't listen to people on the internet. They're idiots.
Yeah, they've been on us... you know, since day one or something. They made like they made
it was a really meta thing to say.
Where I'm like, okay, that was probably a reshoot.
Yeah. And there's a couple things like that in the movie where I felt like they definitely added that in after the fact. Like the line where Leslie Jones says, like, is it a race thing or a woman thing? Because there's no joke to that. It just happens, and then she says the line, and it's like, eh, it kind of came out of... It didn't really come out of nowhere. But, you know, after they get the ghost, or they didn't actually successfully capture the ghost, but then Leslie Jones shows up again... And, like, she's like, I'm going to join. Now, let me talk about Leslie Jones for a little bit, because Leslie Jones actually ended up being far less of a stereotype than I anticipated.
Far less of a stereotype that they portrayed in the trailer.
Right. And if anything...
So if there's one thing that you'll backpedal on and you'll admit to, it's the
I was actually wrong about the Leslie Jones character. She ended up being, if anything, she ended up being the most realistic character of the bunch. Like, yeah. As a person, yeah. She felt like that she could actually be a real person. So in that regard, like I'll eat my fucking hat and you know give that credit it deserves. They made Leslie Jones a real person as a character. If only because the other ones were so fucking terribly written. So they get the Ghostbusters car, and you get that scene that we played on the show before about where they're talking about you get a car and you get a, that whole yeah. fucking scene happens, and it's still got a laugh even though people have seen it before and it's not funny. And her acting in that scene is still fucking bad. I figured maybe they would like use an alternate take or something. Nah, that they still use the exact version. It's fucking terrible. So where do we go from here? Now, after that is I think the is that they oh by the way the costumes they actually explain like everything.
That was before so they get a call. They get a call saying that there is
a concert.
It's a haunting at a concert somewhere at the Stonebrook Theater.
Right.
And you get there and you find that it's called, like, the Rock Revenge Ozzy Tour. Like Rock Revenge Ozfest. And I'm just like, okay. And it's very over the... Just very over the top, hokey, heavy metal fans and everything. Even the band... Even, like, the band sequence and everything was really bad.
By the way, because as a person who goes to a lot of concerts... And again, it's staying within the reality of the real world. That did not feel like a real band.
No, oh my God, no.
It was such a, like, over-the-top, like, we're heavy metal, man!
Yeah.
This is, it's like, it was like what a woman who's never been to a heavy metal concert thinks a heavy metal band would be.
Yeah, exactly. It was that.
And it's like, oh, hail Satan, man! We brought the devil here! Ugh, it's fucking... So, they get the call for that, and...
You find out the origin of the jumpsuits.
Yeah, who basically that Leslie Jones just took them from the MTA.
Yeah.
So, their jumpsuits are basically just MTA worker jumpsuits.
Yeah.
That's it. And also, now McKinnon's character has also, since the last proton pack test, somehow she's miniaturized. And this is, like, in a matter of a day or two. She's on apparently on another level of genius that, again... It doesn't seem logical. So, in the original Ghostbusters, it's kind of like there's a lot of time that goes by in between when they actually get the firehouse and then like the first like time is going by in that period. It's not like the next day, day they do this, the next day. Whereas this movie feels like everything's happening the day after, the day after, the day after. So, like, there's no reasonable amount of time where she should have had the time to invent any of this stuff.
Which she has a very, very fast turnover rate.
Yeah.
Throughout the
inventing
movie.
Technology that shouldn't exist for another 50, 60 years. Because, like, look at it. If you look at the original Ghostbusters, like, everything is pretty basic. You know, they're not... She's not... Egon wasn't inventing fucking things that, like, were, like, too outlandish. Like, even the proton pack... You can tell there was a lot of time and investment that went into building it.
Yeah, well, we can get into that once they start introducing like all the other weapons,
the
like
crazy
Ghostbuster weapons.
Yeah.
So yeah, they
go back to the concert.
Yeah.
So the concert scene, you get Michael McDonald showing up and kind of introducing
not the Michael McDonald I'm obsessed with, the Michael McDonald from Mad TV, the one who played Stewart.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah, he's there and like he's like telling them how fucking scared he was and how he must have scared the ghost off because he has a really high-pitched scream.
Yeah, it's like a very unsettling scream.
Which turns out they like overdub it with a really like loud girl scream.
Yeah.
Like one of those kind of Wilhelm screams that you've heard in other movies. Anyway, so they go into the basement and they start like, and then like they split up, and Leslie Jones is wandering around. A mannequin that's inhabited by the ghost starts following her around and trying to kill her, like Shining style, where it starts breaking the door down. And again, now they've had these miniaturized proton packs that are built. So they use them for the very first time they're ever using them. They just start lining up.
So the thing is, they get the demon out of the mannequin. The demon starts flying around, and the demon comes up.
No, but that's the thing.
Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah,
because to get the mannequin, the ghost out of the mannequin, is the first time they use the proton packs. And they're using it in a very enclosed space.
And then they start chasing after it while still the streams are still going.
Yeah. And this is a thing that like really bothered me, because like, look, if you remember correctly in the original movies, every time they really used the proton packs, the room or whatever was wide or abandoned. Like there was no one else in the room with them.
And they always made it very aware. They always made it very aware that these things are dangerous.
Right.
You have a nuclear proton pack.
Yeah, basically a nuclear reactor on your fucking back. And like the proton stream can burn you if it touches you. So like that was always the thing. Is like, if you remember in the end of the first one, like there's a scene where I think it's Egon is getting like, or maybe it might be Bill Murray. I can't really entirely remember, but like they have the stream really close to their face, and he's like backing his face away from it
because
he could feel like he's getting like there's a danger to the proton streams in the original. Here it's like they're just shooting them off like they're fucking water guns. Like it doesn't matter. Like that's something I also noticed. There didn't seem to be a lot of damage considering they were just firing off these fucking beams all over the fucking place. Like walls weren't being burned down. Like there was no consequence to what they were doing. So they walk out onto the main stage because the ghost has now flown out over the crowd that's on the by the stage while this band is playing, and right over everyone's head again. The equipment they've never used before, that they don't even entirely even know how to use, they're fucking firing over people's heads. And I'm just thinking, like, what if somebody got killed?
They're shooting it at the wall and everything because they're trying to get the demon. And the one guy's screaming at them of like how old the theater is.
Yeah,
it's
an Art Deco theater.
It just seemed very unsafe. And
yeah. Like you're over a crowd of people and you're not even using caution. I know what we're talking about. We're fucking talking about like a movie, but like you have to have an internal logic to your movie, and it's very important that you establish rules and stick to them. And having this thing of like worrying about people's fucking safety and then shooting off a fucking proton beam 2 inches from their heads, it doesn't seem like you're really concerned with the people that you're trying to apparently save. But that's just me. But I did gloss over one thing. The Melissa McCarthy training sequence.
Oh, yeah.
I did forget about that. Because there is a sequence where Melissa McCarthy is first testing out the proton pack, and it's like, you ever see those water jet packs that people have now?
Yeah.
It's like she's got one of those in her hand, and she keeps flying up and down around, and I'm like, and I'm just looking at where the proton stream, because it's going right, I'm like, wouldn't she fucking shoot her, burn her leg off, like the way she's flying around? Just little things like that, you know. It breaks the reality that you're trying to establish. In this case, there doesn't seem to be much of a reality at all.
No.
So now at this concert is the first time you get the dragon ghost scene that you've seen a billion times with, you know, Leslie Jones, like, and they catch the ghost. They catch the dragon ghost, and then they celebrate, and then fucking Ozzy Osbourne does the most random fucking cameo you've ever seen.
He's like, Sharon, I think I'm having flashbacks.
Sharon, I think I'm having a flashback.
And I turn to you, I'm like, did you know about this? And you're like, yeah. I didn't. You didn't even tell me. So.
I knew about the Ozzy appearance. It was just not good. That's why. Thankfully, it was very short. I was glad it was very brief. So then they catch a ghost, and then the next thing is they get dragged into the mayor's office, the mayor of New York City. And basically...
Being played by Andy Garcia.
Which is, yeah. And basically it's established that the the New York, I guess the mayor of New York or mayor's department or whatever, and Homeland Security are aware that Ghost exists, and they're trying to keep it quiet so that nobody panics, because people will do dangerous things if they think Ghost exists, basically. So they want to ask the Ghostbusters not to be Ghostbusters anymore, because they're you know, bringing too much attention to the situation. And then, like, you know, they make some kind of agreement where it's basically like, we'll let you do your thing, but like, we're gonna just badmouth you to the media.
Yeah.
And
there was like this whole weird bit, like, the cat's out of the bag, we gotta put it back in the bag. And that was another thing, like the wonton thing.
It went on
for way too long.
We need to get the information out there that the incident at the concert was a hoax, because otherwise there'd be mass hysteria. We don't want mass hysteria either, but my concern is, I feel like the cat is sort of already kind of out of the bag. I think what they're saying is the cat is out of the bag. They want us to put the cat back inside the bag. I know that's what they're saying, but I'm saying the cat's already out, so it's hard to put the cat back.
It's impossible.
But that's why they have that saying, because if the cat is out of the bag, you can't put it back in the bag.
I put a cat in the bag all the time.
But once the cat is out of the bag, aren't you like, oh, the cat is out of the bag? We just want to shove that damn cat back in the bag.
The cat has been out of the bag before, and yet people lose interest and put it back in.
People always move on.
Yeah, and it wasn't funny. I just didn't really find the humor there. I'm also not retarded or a six-year-old, so maybe, again, I'm not, you know, the target demographic here. So now throughout the rest of the movie, you have this whole thing where Omar from the fucking Wire shows up every once in a while, and he's like, yeah, we got to bring you to the mayor. He had like, the weakest part for a guy like that. It was just like, he's like, we got to bring you to the mayor. You got Omar from the Wire to do that? Like, you could have gotten any random fucking actor to do that part. So yeah, now there's this whole thing where throughout the movie where every time they do something with Ghost, like they're getting denied about it, like they're being badmouthed by the mayor's office and being called frauds and hacks and all that type of shit. And then they're like, well, it doesn't matter because we know what we're doing, and that's all that matters. And then I believe it's the first time they address the what the villain is doing, like the plan. I think that's when they do the scene where they figure out, like, on the map, like, all the locations of where the ghost were finding, where they were finding the ghost. And, like, it somehow triggers Kate McKinnon to run off and basically, like, she runs off and, like, gets a... And I think it's the Tobin Spirit Guide to be honest. Like, that's what it was. And, like, there's a map in New York and it shows...
No, you're
that, am I too far out already?
Yeah, you're too far out.
Did I skip a lot? I've already blanked so much of this movie out.
Yeah.
It's
after
not
that
all
is
through.
After that is when... after that is when Bill Murray's character shows up.
Oh, for the first time, when he shows up on TV.
No, that was the second time he showed up, because he shows up after they release the first video in the train station.
Oh,
and then
okay.
He shows up
right.
Again at the door, and he
right.
comes in.
Okay. Right, and that's right. You're right. I did miss that. Yeah, there's this whole thing. So Bill Murray's cameo, he plays basically like the Walter Peck character in a way. Not quite. He's not working for the EPA, but he's a skeptic. He's like
yeah,
a guy
he's
who's,
a skeptic.
So he's a guy. He's like, you know, the guy who's denying that what they're doing is real, and somehow. Again, disregarding all safety and everything and not listening to reason.
Well, Kristen Wiig's character really wants to show him the ghost because she wants him – even though the
she
other,
wants him to believe her.
Yeah, even though the other three could really care less, she wants him to believe him. So she puts the trap down and they're like, no, don't do it. She's like, oh, yeah, you're right. No, I don't know what I was thinking. And then last minute she hits it. Nothing happens.
Trap opens.
Nothing happens. And a second later, Ghost comes out, picks up Bill Murray's character, and throws him through the window, which we can only assume...
Kills him. Yeah, absolutely kills him. Now, here's a problem I have with that. So, again, establishing a reality that doesn't exist.
Another thing we missed, the Harold Ramis bust at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah. So every Ghostbuster gets a cameo, including Harold Ramis. And his is just... His is actually the most...
Respectful one.
In that they just kind of glossed by this
well, actually, you know what?
Bronze bust of
come to think of it, Ernie Hudson's wasn't bad.
Yeah, it wasn't terrible.
All he's like his was probably the second most respectful next to Harold Ramis.
Yeah, maybe. Like Harold Ramis, they just kind of show this bronze bust that's just sitting in the corner.
Yeah,
that's all you get out of it. You're like, it's not said who it's supposed to be or whatever.
Yeah, he's not a ghost like what the original rumor was.
Yeah. But yeah, Bill Murray gets killed, and then they go to like the police officer interviewing him about who pushed him out the window, and she's like, "Well, a ghost pushed him out the window."
And he's like, "Hey, like what? Like a ghost? Like a Patrick Swayze ghost?"
And another bit that goes because they just start naming off Patrick Swayze movies.
Yeah, she like makes a reference when she puts in like two Patrick Swayze movies together, and then Kristen Wiig's like, "Oh, but that's such a good movie." And then like, "Oh, what about Point Break?" And yeah,
another bit that just went on too long for no reason.
Did I feel like a bit that maybe isn't very that topical, like
Patrick Swayze?
Yeah.
Do the kids even know who Patrick Swayze is?
He's been dead for how long at this point?
At least 10 years, I think.
No, Patrick Swayze didn't die 10 years ago.
Who threw him out the window?
A ghost threw him out the window.
Oh, you mean like Patrick Swayze? Like you're sitting behind you making some pottery?
Yeah, like Patrick Swayze. That's it. Then we were all dancing at a summer camp in the Catskills, and then we sat down, and he was behind me, and we made a vase.
Oh, you're combining the two.
I combined a couple of Swayze.
Oh, you know what's a good one? Roadhouse.
I love Roadhouse.
Point Break.
He was a Point Break.
Come on, at the end with a big wave.
There's a ghost in that, too.
Well, you know what we got here.
It feels like it's been 10 years. It feels like he's been dead a while.
Well, his career probably 10 years at that point, but...
Yeah, I mean, his
career
Patrick
Swayze died in 2009.
All right, so I'm not that far off.
Yeah.
So 7 years he's been gone. But the thing that bothered me about that, right, so, like, someone just got murdered. Bill Murray just got murdered, legitimately. Like, he was pushed out a fucking window, and the cops... And she's telling the cops that it was a ghost, and the cops just, like, not really, like... Well, what, you're gonna just take a fucking woman's word for it? You're not gonna bring him to jail? If I pushed you out a window and I told a cop a ghost pushed you out a window, you don't think that they maybe take me in for a psychiatric evaluation?
That would seem logical.
Yeah. I mean, it's not addressed in any way. Somebody is murdered at their fucking office and it's never mentioned again. It's just like, oh, we made a joke where a guy died, but we're not going to, again, there's no consequences in this reality, so it doesn't really matter. It's, you know, we don't have to do anything. We just let this guy die. All right, so where are we here? Are we at the introduction of the map yet? It takes a while before you actually understand what the fucking movie is about, like what the plot of the villain is.
It's bad when we only saw the movie maybe 2 hours ago.
Luckily it's a forgettable movie, but
I think after that is when I can't remember.
Jesus, that's not good. All right. Was it more dumb Chris Hemsworth jokes? Was that what was going on?
Maybe. But pretty much the main thing after that is then when they find out that you're right. After that is when they find out about the plan.
The low lines, I think they were calling it.
The ley lines.
Ley lines. And basically, like, it literally makes an X on the map. It's like X marks the spot in all literal terms. And it brings him to basically the center for all this paranormal activity.
Which was the hotel where he was working at.
Right. And now Rowan is working in the hotel when they show up. And they go down to, like, try to stop him. And you see, like, his machines and him, you know, all the ghosts that he is, like, trying to release and stuff. And he kind of explains his plan. But then, like, they do this thing where... they try to make him sympathetic. He's like, well, you know, people treated me bad and you know, I don't want all these ghosts are the only ones who understand me, so I'm going to release them and they're going to torture all the people who've ever wronged me and this and that. And then, like, they make this dumb thing where Melissa McCarthy is, like, trying to talk him out of it, and she goes, like, there's things to live for, you know, like soup.
Oh, wait, Rowan, I get it. You know, like, people can be terrible. The thing is, though, there's so many terrific things out there. I mean, wonderful things that are worth living for. I mean, you got soup, and you know that first I can only think of soup. Anybody? Somebody? Patty?
Salad.
And then that's really it. That's the whole joke. So, and then she's like, oh, the police are coming anyway, so don't do it. So what does he do? He kills himself by touching two electric poles.
Yeah.
And this begins...
And then you find out that he was... he learned about all this through their book.
Right, because everything is going to keep tying in with the book. So now that he kills himself, of course he becomes a ghost, because that's the logical thing that you would do. And this begins, like, the possession stuff. Now, at first he shows up at the Chinese restaurant and possesses Melissa McCarthy, which we've all seen, you know, the scene in the trailers, the power of Patty compels you, all that bullshit. Again, still a terrible scene. The joke, despite how many times it was in the fucking trailers, the joke still managed to get a laugh.
Also, at the same time during the scene, you find out what his plan is, because Kate McKinnon, Kristen Wiig has the copy of the book that they found in the basement.
And he's got, like, doodles in it.
He has, like, drawings and writings about what's going to happen, and she runs off to try and warn the mayor, Andy Garcia's character, about what's going to happen.
Right.
And Cecily Strong from SNL.
Right, okay, that's what her name was. I couldn't fuck her fucking name was the whole time. But I think this is when we get to the sequence where they do the... following the exchange with Rowan and that whole thing. I think that's when they do the scene where they bring in all the new weapons.
Yes.
Oh, well let me get there, because we're not quite there yet. So you get the scene where Melissa McCarthy is being possessed. And it's terrible, as you've seen over and over again.
Actually, you know what? The weapons happen after they meet Rowan.
Okay.
They do. So we can talk about that.
Well, yeah. I want to get through this first. And then you also get the possession of Chris Hemsworth's character. Now, Chris Hemsworth is, you know, the dumb shit the whole movie. So he shows up and he's like, I want to be a Ghostbuster too. I was born to be a Ghostbuster. And then the fucking ghost possesses him, and now Chris Hemsworth is basically the embodiment of the villain for the rest of the movie. But like I said, that we'll get back to Chris Hemsworth being the villain, where he actually becomes interesting once Chris Hemsworth starts playing the villain. So after that, they do the weapon scene where Kate McKinnon apparently built all these new weapons in 2 days' time that shouldn't even exist. And there are things that don't even make sense.
Well, there's the proton pistol, which we don't see them use until the end of the movie.
Right. There's a proton. There's a shotgun.
There's a shotgun.
There's grenades. There's a wood chipper for some weird reason.
Yeah, where it sucks the ghost in and it turns the spirit into like the ectoplasm. The slime.
And then there was another one or two.
Pistol. Oh, it was the pistol.
It was the pistol whips.
Yeah, the pistol whips. Yeah.
Now, here's the thing that was bothering me about that, right? So, this comes out of, like, somebody who wrote bad fan fiction of, like, Ghostbusters weapons. Theoretically, they're supposed to catch the ghost, right? Yeah. That's their job. But, I'm pretty sure, outside of the first ghost that they catch, which is the dragon ghost...
All the other ghosts are actually killed.
Yeah, they literally kill the ghost, which is just kind of disturbing for a number of reasons. It's like they're not very good at their job, so we're just gonna murder ghosts.
Yeah,
like especially the end sequence where it gets like really ridiculous. And that was kind of a thing too. Like they didn't kill. I mean, Stay Marshmallow Man was really
we'll get to that.
An exception.
We'll get to that.
Oh no, I was talking about the original. I'm talking about the original.
Okay.
Like Zool is sent back in through the portal. Not Zool, Gozer. Gozer is kind of like sent back. It's not like killed directly. And same thing with Vigo. Vigo isn't like killed. He's just kind of banished to wherever.
The only one that's actually really killed is the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, but that's...
But yeah, that's debatable if it's even killed, because it was just a possession, really.
Yeah.
Anyway. But the weapons didn't make any fucking sense to me, because really, they all... Like, why would you need more than one? You know, the glove thing, the stupid glove thing that they had too. Why would you need that? What purpose does that serve? Yeah, it allows you to have action sequences, But, like, the whole concept of the Ghostbusters was they were kind of just ghost exterminators.
And that's...
They were never meant to be action heroes.
It goes back to what I was saying earlier. It takes away the complete simplicity that the first two Ghostbusters had.
Right. They stop being regular people at that point, like regular people trying to do a job, and start becoming, like...
They became action heroes. Yeah, they became action heroes.
And, like, that's not what Ghostbusters is. You know, they're not supposed to be the fucking Avengers doing, like, backflips and shit. You know, that's not what Ghostbusters
was
supposed to be.
They made it too over the top.
Right. So the weapons don't make sense. Especially the fucking... The thing that really pissed me off was, like, why would... If you could just kill ghosts by sucking them in through the wood chipper thing, why would you even want a proton wand? Why would you want... if you could just pull them in and kill them instantly...
Yeah.
Why would you want to have any of these other things? There's no purpose for it. Also, the fact that they don't trap ghosts because they don't have a containment unit built, which is established later on at the very end of the movie. But it's like these people are very ill prepared for what they're getting themselves into. Like they don't seem to know what the fuck they're doing. There's actually a lot of references, by the way. And I kept saying it to you. There's a bunch of references where they keep complaining about how heavy the equipment is and how they don't want to keep carrying it because it's so heavy.
We need help around here. We cannot keep carrying that equipment up here, and I know their phones aren't ringing off dog right now, but
yeah,
they
you're
will
women.
Be.
You
know, an aquarium is a separate.
Yes, let's just see how the rest of the day goes, you know?
And I'm like, yes, because you're women, and that's the fucking... That was one of the things that came off immediately when they started announcing. I'm like... So they expect
to
believe that Melissa McCarthy is carrying around a 50-pound proton pack for walking around?
Right after they get the Chinese food place, they ask the guy to help.
They ask Hemsworth.
No. She's like, of course we're going to hire him. Come on, you think I'm going to be able to carry those proton packs up the stairs the whole time? Like,
yeah. Basically, if they ever had to do that fucking scene from the first movie where they walked up like 90 stories or whatever it was... you know, with the proton packs on the back, that would never happen. She wouldn't make it up 10 floors without dying of a fucking cardiac arrest. And that's kind of like one of the, you know, you don't want to sound sexist, but literally some things in life are just biologically, like, men will do them better because it's a physical job. You know, yes, you have women who go to the fucking gym and whatnot, but not every woman is capable of lugging around a fucking 100-pound piece of equipment on their back.
No.
And that's kind of the issue here. It's like, I don't buy into the idea that they're capable of doing some of the things that they're doing here. The average woman? Come on.
Yeah. Okay. You have a point.
Yeah. It's not sexist. It's just a reality thing. And that's always one of those things that bothered me. It's because I don't buy into that they're going to be able to accomplish what they're setting out to do. Not without any major difficulty.
So where are we now at this point?
This point, we're now that Rowan's dead and possessed Kevin.
Okay, so now we're this is when after all this, and
well, now they go back to Kevin, who is now he's back at the hotel.
Yeah,
and he kills two police officers. And, you know, then starts the machine back up that starts bringing out the ghost. And now this is when Kristen Wiig's character goes to the mayor at the restaurant.
Yes.
And she starts ranting about, like, how the you know, how everything, they need to evacuate the city. And
yeah, because at this point, she hasn't met up with them yet. So she wasn't there when Kevin gets possessed and everything
right,
like that.
Right, she wasn't there. And she actually doesn't meet up with them until a little bit later.
Yeah.
But, yeah, at this point, now... This is, again, there was actually one funny line that was said, was like, by Andy Garcia, which actually kind of made me laugh a little bit. She's like, you don't want to be like the mayor from Jaws.
Oh, yeah, he's like, never compare me to the mayor of Jaws. Never!
Which actually made me laugh, because if you've ever seen fucking Jaws, the mayor from Jaws is one of the worst politicians of all time. We're not going to close a goddamn beach on 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
You know, the all-time bad guy who fucking didn't listen when he was warned. And that's kind of the joke. You know, the mayor, in this case, of New York City, didn't want to evacuate, even though he's being warned by somebody who knows something is about to happen.
Yeah.
So now she's separate from the team, and now it actually starts happening. I think not so long after that is like the ground starts shaking and like you start seeing the ghosts start escaping, and that's kind of when it really starts breaking down.
At this point, they're walking down a block, and they see a whole bunch, because like cars are crashing and there's pandemonium everywhere. They see a street closed off by crashed cars and like hot dog trucks.
Yes. I mean, we're skipping ahead a little bit, but at this point, I don't even want to go back.
What did we skip over?
Are we at that point? Like, where they're at the... I'm trying to think of what happened after...
Yeah, because right after...
I feel like I'm missing something.
No.
Maybe I'm not. I feel like I'm missing a piece of the puzzle here.
Because after the whole X thing is when Kristen Wiig's character runs off and tells the mayor, and then they deal with the whole thing about Kevin getting possessed... And Kate McKinnon almost dying, and the power of Patty compels you, all that garbage. They're walking down the block. They come across a group of.
Sorry, we just got interrupted because we looked over and the Progressive Ghostbusters commercial is on, and also horrific for so many reasons. Yeah.
Slimer pops out.
Okay. Yeah. We'll start there. So they start heading to the hotel. To try to stop Rowan, this is the first appearance of Slimer, and they get out of the car, and what happens? Immediately, Slimer steals the car, which again shows that women don't know what the fuck they're doing, because you never leave the keys in a running car.
But how did he even manage to drive the car? He doesn't have feet.
Yeah, that, I mean, people, I've already read the argument that people have said, like, well, I think it's in the second Ghostbusters, you see him driving a bus.
Yeah.
But, like...
I know.
It's one of those things. It just looks really goofy.
And he drives off.
And he takes the car.
The
actual one is gone.
They start walking down the block, and they turn the corner, and they see a whole bunch of old-timey Thanksgiving Day parade, Halloween-type...
Yeah, like the Thanksgiving balloon, basically.
And it starts coming down the block towards them, and they...
This bothered me.
Ghost balloons?
Ghost balloons. Why do ghost balloons exist? Do balloons go to hell when they die? Like, what happens to a balloon when it's outlived its usefulness? Because it didn't make any goddamn sense to me why there would be ghost balloons. Like, even if let's say there was a massacre on Thanksgiving Day one year and a bunch of people died at a parade and forever had to like live in, you know, the costumes that they died in a parade, why would the balloons be ghost? That doesn't really make any goddamn sense to me. So the balloons start attacking them, and they start basically, again, not catching the balloons or balloon ghost, and they literally just start blowing them up. Like, they just start shooting them, and they explode. And then finally, one looking like the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Looking, it was exactly the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
No, I will never refer to it as the Stay Puffed Marshmallow
Man.
That
was the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
It looked like the Stay Puffed. It was like Godzilla 98. It was Godzilla in name only. This was Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man in name only.
No, that was...
Even though he looked like the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man, he was not the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
That was 100% Stay...
He was a fucking balloon!
Just come to terms with it. It was the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man, John.
I don't want to admit that. I don't want to admit that that's a thing that happened. But...
And they're trying to shoot him.
And he falls on them.
And they kill him off by...
Well, first of all, he lands on them. He, like, belly flops on them. And they kind of get trapped under his stomach. And now Kristen Wiig, who's already been separated from the team, all of a sudden, the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man...
Explodes.
And earlier in the movie, back in the weapon sequence, there's like this random, you don't make anything of it at the time, but Kate McKinnon hands Kristen Wiig a Swiss Army knife.
Because she's like, I don't trust you with anything else.
Yeah, she's like, please don't touch that, please. And she hands her a Swiss Army knife, and she's like, well, you know, women need to have protection or something. One of those kind of shitty lines. And then it comes back now, like when they're trapped under the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man, well... Kristen Wiig just pops the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man ghost with a Swiss Army knife. So now we've established that you can kill ghosts with ordinary weapons. They don't need to be special, like, proton screams or whatever. You can kill them with a fucking Swiss Army knife, which doesn't make fucking sense because 2 seconds earlier, you had three people shooting at this fucking balloon thing with proton streams, which didn't seem to affect it, but yet she's killed it with a Swiss Army knife.
I can't reach the trigger!
You guys, this
is exactly how I pictured my death.
Proton guns are all well and good, but sometimes you need the Swiss Army.
She killed a ghost with a Swiss Army knife.
Am I shouting?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the balloon popped my ear.
Again, not staying within your own rules of your reality. So now the team's together again. Slimer, I think, is riding around the car with now a female Slimer.
And, like, a bunch of other ghosts.
Yeah. And now the army and the police who showed up earlier to try to fight the ghost, which I really don't expect... I really don't understand what they expected to do. Like, what are you going to do with guns and when you're shooting at ghosts?
Yeah.
But Rowan, who is in Chris Hemsworth's body, takes possession of the entire army and all the police and, like, kind of freezes them in, like, a dance pose. Now, this was a sequence that you actually end up seeing in the credits. Originally, and I've talked about it before, there was a dance number sequence where I believe he makes them dance to You Should Be Dancing by the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
And they cut the scene. Like, now it just goes, like, he freezes them in place.
Yeah, but it doesn't make any sense, because now you have a group of, like, 60 police officers
just
in
army. Just in a weird pose. In a dance pose.
In, like, a weird dance pose. But and there's no payoff.
Right. He just freezes them in place, and then the Ghostbusters show up, and he makes it look like 70s Times Square for some rude reason. Like, it's never really explained why. He just, all of a sudden, like, they're in old Times Square. Because I'm not really sure. They don't really explain why they did that. Like, let me talk about not only Times Square, but the most of the look of the movie. So, for most of the movie, whenever they do, like, you know, helicopter shots, they do pan wide shots. You can tell it's New York. You know, you see all the New York buildings. Now, anytime they're doing other scenes, it looks nothing like New York. The architecture is weird. Like, the streets look too wide. It just doesn't look like New York, and that's because the movie was shot in Boston. And you can tell because...
Which we didn't find out until... We knew it didn't look like New York, but we didn't find out it was in Boston until the credits. It said thank you to the state of...
Massachusetts.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like New York, and the whole thing feels off, because there's actually a scene where Rowan, once he becomes the big monster from the trailer that you see in the trailers, the big, you know, the logo ghost, which, oh God, I'll get into that. There's a scene where he's smashing buildings and, like, the skyline doesn't even look right. Like, the buildings are way too low, and that's, like, a Boston thing. Like, Boston doesn't really have a lot of taller buildings. Like, he's swatting out of these smaller buildings, and it looks really fucking weird. Like, I'm like, there's nowhere in New York that looks like that. And then Times Square did not look like the Times Square we all know, so that's a whole bigger issue with the terrible green screening that they were doing on top of it. But they start fighting all these ghosts, and there's, like, pirate ghosts, and there's, like... I think they were pilgrim ghost. There was a bunch of, like, really strange, like, choices that they went with here.
And this was the big scene where you really got to see all of the new weapons in action. You had you had Kristen Wiig using the shotgun. You had Leslie Jones using the
wood chipper.
As well as the grenades with Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, they're just executing ghosts.
You had Kristen Wiig. You had Kate McKinnon use the pistol whip with that lick.
By the way, that whole sequence with Kate McKinnon was so ridiculous to me, because it's out of place. It's out of place with the rest of the movie. Like, she's doing fucking, like, kung fu basically with to the ghost, and it's just really out of place. Like, meanwhile, Melissa McCarthy is using the glove thing, punching ghosts.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
Yeah, so at this point, they finally, after they kill probably 40 or 50 ghosts, and there should be more attacking them, but, you know, once they kill enough ghosts, like, the ghosts just decide to leave them alone, apparently. They make it to the hotel, and Rowan, Chris Hemsworth, is there, and he's, like, taunting them, and, like, he does this weird Peter Pan joke where he flies around the room like Peter Pan.
And he's like, you know what? I don't like this body anymore. You can have it. And he
just tries to drop them on top of him.
And they land, and then he lands on Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, and they make a whole joke
about how heavy he is because he's all made of muscle.
Yeah.
So now Rowan is at, for some weird reason, like, after he leaves the body, he, like, Leslie Jones says something about...
He's a spirit.
Yeah, he's a spirit, but like Leslie Jones says something about like, why can't you be like one of those cute ghosts? And then all of a sudden, he becomes like an animated cartoon version of the Ghostbusters logo.
Yeah.
Which didn't make any goddamn sense to me. Like, why would, even if he was a ghost, why would he become a 2D animation?
Come on, Rowan, show yourself!
What form would you prefer I take?
Is there anything in this movie that doesn't look like a green screen right now?
Like a bullseye.
Well, I tell you what I prefer. I prefer something nice and cute, like a friendly little ghost.
Oh, is this what you want? Something more familiar?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Well, you know what? I don't have no problem with that. Thank you very much for being reasonable.
If this is what you want, it works for me.
Guys, he's really going for it.
And I said cute. Cab.
It looked like Roger Rabbit style, yeah, like a Roger Rabbit bit.
That's exactly what it looked like.
Like, it wasn't like a... It was weird because he goes from he goes from being the Ghostbusters logo to, like, a realistic version of the Ghostbusters logo. Like, it's a weird transition because it goes from, like, cartoon look to, like, a realistic look. And that just, like, threw me for so many reasons because it just kind of seemed weird, like a very weird choice to go that route. Like... It would have been one thing for him to just become the fucking the evil, realistic-looking Ghostbusters logo. Or even, like, a happy... Like, you could have done, like, a Stay Puft thing where it looked like a realistic... Like, the Stay Puft, when Stay Puft shows up, he's not a fucking cartoon. He's a realized version of what that cartoon... Because they show... Stay Puft is established earlier in the movie in Dana Barrett's kitchen.
Yeah.
There's a bag of Stay Puft marshmallows, and you see the cartoon Stay Puft on it. So it's kind of established. Here, it's like he literally becomes a cartoon for a minute... And then becomes a realistic version of the cartoon. Whereas I think it should have just jumped right into a real... Like, he could have started as the happy version of, like, the ghost. And then, like, when he turned, you could have done the villainous version with the sharp teeth and everything. But they went for this weird choice of making him a cartoon.
Until, like, the fight scene is done, that's all you. Because, honestly, at that point,
You tuned out. You started going on your phone and texting. Like,
yeah, like... texting people how bad the movie was and the fact that it wasn't over yet.
Yeah. So something I that caught me. So when he becomes the Ghostbusters logo ghost and he starts growing in size to like the size of a building, the building starts being destroyed like from the inside out, like,
and starts falling.
It
crumbling.
Starts falling over the place. Now, last you saw, like they're outside. And they're like, oh, we need to get out of here. Let's run. Now, all the police officers and army guys are frozen, standing right in front of this building.
It happens like a domino effect. Like, they knock one over, and then all the other police and everything knock over as well.
But they don't, like, wake up. They're still, like, comatose or whatever. So now the building, pieces of the building are falling over, and like, the building literally just explodes, and he steps out. Yeah. And I'm like, so all those, you know, military and police officers are dead, right? Because... There's no reasonable way they should be alive. Like, either he stepped on them, or they died from being crushed by the building debris. But it's never, you know, something, again, that's never addressed. You know, it's never addressed.
Well, it's also kind of weird how, like, once they bring all the,
We'll get there, because there is a payoff to what I'm saying right now. So, they should all be dead. Now... Rowan goes off and starts destroying all the buildings around the city. He just, you know, he's Godzilla size, so he's swatting at buildings and stuff. And there's this big portal now where they look at it and they're like, oh, well, if we reverse the portal, we can, you know, use it as basically a giant ghost trap and suck everything back in.
Holoprotonic reversal! It's gonna turn that portal into a giant ghost trap. You are a genius, Patty.
I'm a Ghostbuster.
All right, let's get our ways
back. And how do you think they do that? Well, a little earlier when Slimer steals the Ecto-1, Leslie Jones is going to shoot at it, and Kate McKinnon's character like goes, "No, don't shoot it. That there's a nuclear reactor on top of it." Well, turns out that'll come in handy when they basically kind of goad Slimer into driving into the portal with Mrs. Slimer, who fucking is it's such groan-inducing bullshit. Because why do you need a female Slimer? It seems like it's only there to sell toys, which apparently aren't selling anyway. And there's no reason for that to exist. So they bring Slimer into the portal and blow up the you know, the equipment that's on top, and it sets off the explosion. Now, there's this dumb fucking shot after they blow up the car where you see Slimer and Mrs. Slimer in, like, a seat where... Like, you ever see in Die Hard...
Yeah.
In Die Hard 2, when he uses the ejector seat?
Yeah.
And it looks like that kind of shot where, like, you know, you see him coming towards the camera, and then they start laughing as they go back down. Yeah. It's like one of those kind of things.
And as Rowan is, like, deteriorating...
Like, oh, yeah, they set him on fire. Like, she blows up something and he catches fire and he gets burned.
But as he's being pulled into the portal,
He grabs buildings to keep from getting sucked into the portal.
And he grabs Melissa McCarthy's character.
Well, we're not even that far yet.
Oh, my God.
Because before we get to that, so he's grabbing the buildings to try to keep from getting sucked back in. And they're like, well, we'll make him loosen his grip. So what do you think they do?
Oh, yeah.
They shoot him in the dick. And then I think Leslie Jones goes, so that's what you wanted us to shoot him, right? And she goes, Melissa McCarthy goes, yeah. And, you know, now Rowan's getting sucked back towards the portal. And right before he goes through, he grabs Melissa McCarthy. So the portal's closing, and then Kristen Wiig just decides, hey, I'm going to go rescue Melissa McCarthy. So she ties a, what is that, like the winch. It's like a winch that you use for, like, when you, on, like, the front of, like, Jeeps and stuff. Like, when you need to be pulled up, you know, a mountain or something. She ties that around her waist and jumps into the portal and starts going down through the, you know, the ghost world or whatever the fuck it is, following Melissa McCarthy, and they're kind of, like, free-falling. Now, at this point, I'm just doing, like, basic thought process here. The rope shouldn't have been long enough to go as far as she did down it. Like, this seems like they went, like, a mile or two down this whole rabbit hole thing. And I'm like, well, at some point, it should have run out of rope. But, you know, that, again, I'm probably overthinking it.
Yeah.
Just scissor her and get over with.
Anyway, you see Rowan, she rescues Melissa McCarthy, and they literally pull them, like, Kate McKinnon and Leslie Jones are pulling them up out of the portal. Like, I guess they somehow, the ghost world, even though the building was back to being solid.
Well, yeah, that was one thing I was going to bring up, which is so weird. It's like, when they do that whole reverse portal situation, all the buildings that were getting crushed were then getting rebuilt.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense.
I wish I had something to throw at the screen right now.
Shut up!
Well, you know, because it's convenient to the story, at least, because then...
Or is it because of the fact that those buildings that they were destroying were the buildings that were from the alternate?
No, building's a building. It's not like they went to...
But now that I'm thinking about it, it actually kind of makes sense.
Well, I was thinking more of it's like, it's so they didn't have the massive plot hole of... Why, when all the New Yorkers who left come back and they're denying that anything happened, why they don't have to explain why there's a ton of buildings that were destroyed.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think it was more that than anything else. Because, again, the army, when they go back to that shot, all the army and police officers are alive.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be alive, which they absolutely shouldn't have been. And so they pull McCarthy and Kristen Wiig, and for some weird reason that's not explained, they have white hair.
Something in the time...
Something happened when they went down and their hair turned white. It's not really...
I guess we'll find that out in the extra 15 minutes.
Yeah, there's an extended edition of this eventually. I don't know that I'll ever see it, but maybe one day if I'm drunk enough or really want to... Maybe on my deathbed. And then Chris Hemsworth shows up, back to normal, and he's eating a sandwich.
He's eating like a burrito or something like that.
And... Then there's this whole thing about, like, they're like, Kevin, what happened? Where he's like, oh, I saved everybody because I pressed a button on this thing and the portal went away. And she's like, no, that's just a coincidence, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, where were you when we were saving everybody? He's like, oh, I went to the deli to look for you guys.
Sweet Kev, the two are unrelated. More important question, when did you have time to get a sandwich?
When I was looking for you guys, I looked in that deli over there.
When we were risking our lives trying to save New York City, you stopped in to get a sandwich?
Of course, splitting hairs. Okay, potatoes, tomatoes. It doesn't matter. Point is, the Ghostbusters are back together again. Okay? And that's what friends...
And I'm like, Okay, so you're telling me that in the middle of all this chaos and a giant monster running around, he somehow found a deli that was open and was making sandwiches.
Maybe he made the sandwich himself.
Based on how dumb they made him out to be, I don't believe that to be possible.
Jesus Christ, we fucking forgot to mention the Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, yeah. You know what? It was so forgettable. I didn't even think about it. Yeah, so this happens following the scene with the mayor and when they end up in Times Square. Kristen Wiig has to take a cab, is trying to take a cab to meet up with the rest of the crew. And she pulls over a cab, and it's Dan Aykroyd. And Dan Aykroyd, in the worst Brooklyn accent I've ever heard anyone do an impression of, says, "I ain't afraid of no ghost."
Drives off. He's like, "I don't like going down to Chinatown, and I ain't afraid of no ghosts."
Yeah, it's fucking awful.
Fast forward
back to where we were. So the world is saved, and things are supposedly back to normal. And then they show them at a diner, like watching on the news, like again the mayor is denying.
This was the only scene where I genuinely laughed the entire movie, and I don't know if this is a good thing or not. They're interviewing Andy Garcia's character, and they're like, "No, that wasn't ghost. The terrorists
put something hallucinogens in the drinking water. That was the thing."
And as he's doing it, somebody walks behind them on camera and just yells, "Baba Booey!"
I saw pilgrims, ghost pilgrims.
So you're honestly going to stand here and tell me that we didn't all see ghosts, that what actually happened was that terrorists drugged all of the water with hallucinogens?
Wait, what?
Baba Booey! I'm
trying to claim the event wasn't supernatural, despite so many eyewitness accounts of the contrary.
That probably wasn't the only funny fucking thing in the movie. then it ends on them. Basically, the city makes them a deal. It's like, well, thank you for the saving our asses and keeping it quiet. We're gonna pay you. So now the Ghostbusters becomes like a government entity, basically.
Yeah.
We'll give you whatever you need to do, you know, to keep doing your work. And what do you think they do?
They give them, the city gives them the firehouse.
Yep. They get the fucking firehouse. In exactly how you remember it being on the inside, the green and white walls and all.
Except this time it's a lot more well put together. It's not like
it's all clean on the inside. It doesn't look like complete shit. And then, that's also where Ernie Hudson shows up, too, because Ernie Hudson is
Leslie
Jones's uncle, and he shows up like asking what happened to the hearse, which you know was the Ecto-1.
Where is it? It's on the other side. Other side where? New Jersey.
And then he actually had a line this last line of the movie, and I actually did laugh at it, because he's like, "I got 4 funerals this weekend. What am I gonna do with 1 hearse?" And she goes, "You can just stack them on top of each other. I ain't gonna stack them up like flapjacks."
It is actually pretty.
It was like,
see,
it was a
I didn't
funny
hear
line.
That because at that point I had to pee so bad.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't let me leave because it's like, no, wait, there's an after credit scene and there's a dance number during the credits.
There was a lot of shit going on during the credits. There is the reveal of Sigourney Weaver as Kate McKinnon's character's mentor.
Yes.
Oh,
we also, the receptionist is in the movie.
Oh, yeah, Annie Potts, she's at the hotel. She
plays a receptionist.
She just goes, "What do you want?"
"What do you want?"
And that's it. Like, that's her whole thing.
Also, they have Hemsworth say that.
Yeah.
On the answer machine. Ghostbusters, what do you want? No, the one thing I was surprised, they didn't have him lose the accent.
No, he was doing he was in Australian mode. Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, the dance. You get to see the dance sequence, which was deleted from the regular movie. And there is an after credit sequence, which is Leslie Jones listening to a tape recorder that says Zool.
Yeah, she's like, "What do you hear?" She's like, "I don't know what it is." She's like, "What do you know anything about Zool?" And at that point, I got up and I'm like, "John, we're not friends anymore. Fuck you."
Yeah, so that's the plot. That's what happens in the movie. Acting for me, I think Leslie Jones actually ends up surprising me the most. She held her own and probably ends up being the most decent character out of the bunch.
Yeah.
McKinnon felt way too fucking cartoony.
I enjoyed that, though, for some reason.
I didn't. Melissa McCarthy and Krista Wiig were fucking both awful.
Very weird chemistry.
Yeah. I don't think any of the cast really had chemistry.
Very forced. Especially between them two.
I didn't feel like any of them had any chemistry as far as working with each other.
Especially like the stories of those leaked stories that Sony put out of them not being able to get along. that is completely evident when you watch how they just like come together on screen and just like work off of each other.
Yeah, I thought the direction was really bad. Everything felt flat. It was a lot of like those really like standard. It felt like if Kevin Smith directed a Ghostbusters movie, it was just like really plain shots.
But then the difference between that is it'd probably be entertaining.
Yeah, maybe. But in terms of his direction style, Kevin Smith is a very, very static director. He like just sets up a camera, points it, and that's it. Like yeah. There's not a lot of movement, and that's what this is. I felt everything looked really fake from the sets. Like the sets looked really bad. The CG looked really bad. The green screening looked really bad. The score was awful. Like everything was revolved around the stupid Ghostbusters theme. Like, do you remember in the original Ghostbusters? It's not just the Ghostbusters theme. There's like that all that piano music that they have. Like, yeah. I forgot that. Randy Edelman, I think, is the guy who did it. If I'm wrong, whatever. But you know that very famous do 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 do.
Yeah.
Like, there's none of that. Every fucking song on the soundtrack is Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters theme. It's every fucking song. There's nothing but the Ghostbusters theme in this movie, and like 30 different versions of it, like a piano version, like a rap version. There's like a punk rock version.
Yeah, like right at the very end.
It's a very strange choice for the soundtrack. Honestly. I think Paul Feig was not the right guy for this movie.
No.
I think in different hands, it could have worked somehow, but he was not the right guy for it. I can't say I've been more disgusted walking out of a theater. Like, as a longtime Ghostbusters fan, as somebody who owns fucking... you know, props and, like, the fucking firehouse, Lego firehouse and old toys and this and that. Like, I'm probably one of the most dedicated fucking Ghostbusters fans that you're going to find. And I could not, for the life of me, say that I ever want to watch this movie again. Like, there's nothing redeeming about it at all to me. There's nothing I enjoyed. Not the comedy didn't work for me. The jokes were so fucking lowbrow, that's something I love about the original Ghostbusters. So this is like everything is over the top. Like it's like drilling a fucking joke through into your head. Like, get it? Like you it's like you have to like beat somebody over the head with it because they're not letting the joke breathe to just like be understood. It's like, you know, when people have to explain a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like doing that. Whereas the original Ghostbusters, everything's very subtle and, like, you know, Egon's just, like, saying big words that, like there's, we were just watching Ghostbusters 2 a little bit ago, and he makes it, like, you know...
Venkman makes jokes, he's like, oh, I'm sure those girls really like that big cranium, and he goes, no, he's like, they just really like my epidermis.
Right, which is a dick joke.
Yeah.
So...
And Murray's character looks at him kind of like... I don't know what you're talking about.
Right, like he didn't know the big words.
Yeah.
That's what makes it funny. That's funny. Not like having to like explain, you know, it's not like if it was this movie, it would have been like, so I bet girls really like that big head of yours. I think they really like my big cock.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it would have been like. And then you know, and then instead of just kind of giving him a strange look, he went like, "Oh, I can see that you do have a big cock." Like there's a queef joke at the beginning of the movie that was like really like, why?
Oh yeah, the fart. Yeah, they get her to listen to something, make it seem like they have a ghost on tape, and it's a fart, and she's like,
and Kate McKinnon goes, "What if I told you it was from the front?"
Yeah.
All right, I'm just gonna flat ask you. Was there, besides the Baba Booey thing, was there anything you enjoyed?
No. There wasn't. And I'm not, this is like...
We're being honest.
I'm being honest.
I've already been accused of being biased and people saying that I'm only validating the fact that I wanted to hate it to begin with.
No, I wanted to go...
I was willing to be proven wrong.
Yeah, and everyone I spoke to about it, everyone I told said that I was going in with an open mind... and that if I like it, I like it. And I'll be the first to admit that I was the one that enjoyed the movie. There was not one thing I could find about this movie that I enjoyed.
It was a miserable experience at the theater.
We were on the ride home, we were trying to figure out if there was ever a movie that we felt this way. And we sat through Batman vs. Superman. At least in Batman vs. Superman, as much as we didn't like it, there were still some entertaining parts. But I'm trying to think of, like, what other movies that I've seen in theaters where halfway through the movie, I look at you and I'm just like, fuck, is this over yet?
It felt long. It's under 2 hours, but it felt really long. Which goes to say a lot, because I've seen 3 hour movies like a Pacific Rim or fucking Watchmen or any of those movies where it's like fucking Batman Superman.
Yeah.
Like, I'll sit through a 3 hour movie, but Jesus Christ, this was a 2 hour movie and it felt long. And I'll give it this. Chris Hemsworth, for what it was, it was okay.
Yeah.
Chris Hemsworth was fine. I think, again, Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy were fucking awful. McKinnon, I guess, was okay. I didn't like what she was going for. I felt like it didn't belong in this movie. Like, yeah. It felt like completely out of nowhere. Leslie Jones ends up being one of the few redeeming factors, if anything, which I can't even believe I'm fucking saying.
She held her up for someone who I feel has, like, the least amount of, like, acting experience compared to the other three.
There was some bad acting moments she had.
No, but I'm...
But some bad line deliveries.
Yeah, but she held her own, though.
Yeah. The cameos all felt terrible when forced. I absolutely believe that Boomer was forced into his cameo. Absolutely. I don't even doubt that.
And on purpose, they were like, we're going to give you the one that gets the most screen time.
Probably. Honestly, I really hope this doesn't get a sequel. I hope. Because I don't want this to be what the legacy of Ghostbusters becomes. Like, Ghostbusters 2 isn't a great movie, but it's still fun. Like, there's still enjoyable fucking things about it. I can't say that about this. And I almost feel like if there's anybody... Because between the people laughing in the theater, I almost felt like I'm living in a society I don't belong to. Because I feel like me and you have a pretty good sense of humor. And
fucked up at times. But
fucked
yes.
up at times, but I'll laugh at something if it's funny. And I felt like so disconnected from the other people in the theater that were laughing. And I understand that humor is subjective, but like, I almost felt like you have to be on a really low level of like, anything is funny to me to really enjoy this.
Mm.
And I'll say it. If there are people who are going to tell me like I'm wrong or that they thought this was a really good movie or it was really, I'll fucking unfriend you.
But you know what? At the same time, I'm willing to have somebody
try to explain it to you.
Yeah. So like, I'm even willing to let somebody come on to the podcast.
Oh, to debate
between you two. Hear their points of why they liked it, why they thought it was great, because there are people that we know that thought it was great.
Which is very disappointing to me.
And then you have someone like you, who is the complete opposite end of the spectrum. I would love to hear what it was to them that made the movie so great.
And I would too.
And have it be something aside from the fact that they were female Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Look, I'll give the idea that female Ghostbusters is fine. I'll give into that. I don't have a problem with there being female Ghostbusters. I just thought the movie was complete shit. It wasn't funny. The humor did absolutely nothing for me. I thought the casting was really poorly done. I think they could have found... I think that people like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey are far funnier than Wiig and McCarthy. You know, even Emma Stone, I think, is a better comedy actress than them two. As far as like I don't know, there's just something was missing here. There was no heart to you know what it is? There's no fucking heart to the movie.
No.
There's a lot of heart in the original Ghostbusters. There's none here. This felt cynical. It felt like a cash grab. Like it was only done for the money by the studio, and that's it. And I understand that's what most movies are now. There is no original ideas that are made just because people want to be creative. I know we're in a fucking time now where all movies are made for money, regardless of quality. but I felt like this was the worst kind. Whereas even when we went to see Ninja Turtles a couple weeks ago,
yeah,
I felt like at least that movie was trying to be respectful of the original material in a way that, like, it was almost a love letter to the stuff that we all grew up with.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was giving us all the things we ever wanted to see on film. It gave us the fucking Technodrome. It gave us Krang. It gave us Bebop. It gave us Rocksteady.
It did the one thing that the first one failed to do, and that was embrace the campiness.
The weirdness.
This
actually went too far with the weirdness. Whereas Ghostbusters is a weird... Like... Think about the video game, right? So, if you've played the Ghostbusters video game, for the most part, you don't... I mean, there are ghosts that I think you... There's the marshmallow ghost that you pop in the beginning. But I think for the most part in the video game, you actually catch the ghosts.
All of them is catching the ghosts.
Or you, like, slime them, or, like, you do... You like it wasn't just go around killing ghosts, move on. Like, it wasn't that kind of thing. I don't know. I don't really get what they were going for here at all. I don't understand why people think this is a good movie. I don't understand why people think it was funny.
Well, as of right now, it has a 74% rating on Rotten Tomato. It has a its rating on Metacritic was pretty low. It has a what is it? I'm sorry, it's not coming up. 60% on Metacritic, and an IMDb is the lowest with a 4.6 out of 10.
I'm gonna say what I said to you earlier. I now know what it's like as a fan to be raped.
And the audience score went down.
Like
it was 53 earlier. It's down to 51 now.
You know what I feel like? I think I finally figured out what I could compare this to. I finally feel like how I felt, actually probably worse than how I felt after seeing the last Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, okay. You're being serious. I thought you were going to go like another rape joke or something.
No. I mean, if you've ever seen that episode of South Park, Jones being raped on the pinball machine by George Lucas and
Steven Spielberg,
it was like that. I felt like I was watching the Ghostbusters being raped by Paul Feig and Sony. That's what this was like. And I just feel sad. I feel uncomfortable and sad now that this is what people are going to... This is what younger children are going to know as the Ghostbusters.
Yeah. That's just something we have to
live with.
Because
they're going to have shitty parents that aren't ever going to show them the original. That makes you fucking depressed.
Makes me never want to have kids.
Like
everyone else is.
I still have my original Kenner Proton Pack in box. Like, I still have all the pieces. It's in a box in my closet over here. Like, I still have it.
You mean the hole in the wall with the blanket over it?
Shut up. But I still have it. And I cherish that fucking thing. And I just think now is like somewhere some kid is going to have the same thing one day, but it's going to be related to this movie.
And you know what? As much as I know you hate that, like you can't there. I've learned
when Episode 7 came out that people who grew up watching The Phantom Menace genuinely love it.
Yeah,
but so, that's because their memories they don't have that memory of how good the originals are to compare it
to. So what I was trying to get to is that so even though we know those movies are garbage, there is a generation of kids that grew up with that and love that movie. So we need to, unfortunately, as much as we don't want to, we need to respect the kids that are going to grow up with this movie in their generation and are going to grow up and show their kids this movie.
But all it proves to me is that this generation has really poor taste. That art, the art of making real movies is dead. I mean,
I wish I knew what to tell you, but I don't know what to say.
I think I honestly, everything we've ever believed about Idiocracy is coming true. In every way. It's amazing how accurate that fucking movie is becoming, because you have to be fucking dumb. Like, really fucking dumb to go to this movie, enjoy it. And if you even come back saying it's better than the originals, you should be dragged out into the street and fucking shot in the back of the head. Because you don't deserve to live among the rest of us in this society.
My views are definitely aren't as drastic as that, but I can understand where you're
coming from. I believe in the extermination!
Like, you know, if people...
I will build camps for all the people who like the film, the Ghostbusters ladies.
If people want to like it, I will respect that.
I won't. I'll just look down on them.
Well, that's because you're you and I'm me. If people want to like it, they can like it.
I'll look down on them the same way I look down on people who thought Batman vs. Superman was a good movie.
Okay, let me just fucking finish.
Okay.
But what I would like to know, as much as I hated it, what I would love to know from the people that did like it are legitimate reasons on why they liked it.
I don't see any way that anyone could ever change my mind about this movie. For the rest of its existence, I will never accept this movie as being anything but a complete pile of shit. And I've seen a lot of terrible movies. This is among one of the worst. As far as a big budget Hollywood movie, this is probably my top three worst movies ever.
And what are the other two?
I know you're very fond of it for some weird reason, but I really hate the Green Lantern movie.
I'm not fond of it.
Well, you thought it was good.
I thought, okay, you're putting words in my mouth.
Okay.
I said that I didn't think it was as bad as everyone made it out to seem. I watched it. I was entertained, but I wasn't like, oh my God, this is the greatest movie in the world. So.
All right. Crystal Skull.
Oh, yeah. Well,
Crystal Skull is definitely my number one worst big budget sequel or remake or whatever. That was hard to sit through. Once the monkey showed up, I was done.
Oh yeah,
the Shia LaBeouf monkey.
I lost you for a second. I'm like, wait, there were no monkeys in Ghostbusters.
No. Well, depending on who you ask.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You weren't going to get around that one. I'm sorry. You just weren't.
I'd like that. I wanted to think highly of you.
Look, I accepted when Extreme Ghostbusters had a kid in a wheelchair.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
So it's not like I'm saying like nobody, that only white males can be Ghostbusters. That's never been the case.
Anyway, that's all the time we...
No. But... I think if you make a fucking movie called Ghostbusters, it should fucking resemble the original in some way or be respectful. I felt like this was just shitting on everything that Harold Ramis created. And I felt bad that they dragged in Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and Sigourney Weaver and Annie Potts and
Dan Aykroyd. I feel like if anyone, Aykroyd would have been the one that wanted to do it the most.
Yeah, well, he has a financial stake in it.
Yeah, so of course he's going to, you know, you can feel bad for everybody else. I don't feel bad for him because I feel like he wanted to be there.
You know, someone earlier said, was it like a funeral? And I said, no, because funerals are respectful.
You compared it to witch burnings.
This is like watching somebody get burned alive and then their ashes being pissed in.
So how do you feel now after you've watched it, you've talked about it? Do you feel like, you know, what
I'm glad it's over.
What I'm more concerned about is what the fuck are we going to talk about now? We've invested so much time into it on this podcast. It's like, where do we go from here?
I don't know. Unless they announce a sequel.
Oh.
The podcast will never be the same after today. That's for sure. We live in a different time. I know we kind of summed up the whole movie, but there was something that really was strange at the very end of the movie. They like in the credit sequence, they go on top of the firehouse and they look out over the city, and then it's just like somehow in all the lights of the buildings, it says I Heart Ghostbusters,
yeah,
or I Heart GB,
I Heart GB,
which you said like I love gangbangs,
yeah,
which I thought was really funny, but
oh,
like
thank you.
It looked so fucking cheesy, like the shot looked really poorly composited. It just looked like a cheap video game shot. But like that's the tone of the whole thing. It's like that's not right. Like the Ghostbusters got a fucking ticker tape parade, and you know they didn't get fucking like shitty lights on the side of a building because people are too lazy. But whatever. I'm glad this is done.
Yeah, me too.
I think. We can close the... Unless someone wants to come on and debate, I think we're
which I'm kind of hoping.
We can officially close the book on this.
Yeah.
And move on with our lives and never speak of it again. I mean, if you haven't seen the movie, I'm going to tell you, don't ever see this. Don't let your kids see it. Don't let your friends see it. Don't let your parents watch it on HBO. If you have anybody in your life that's going to see it, shoot them in the leg so they can't get to the theater. Slit their tires so that they can't drive to the theater. Yep. Cut their brake lines.
Wow, okay.
Make sure your friends and family do not see this movie.
Friends don't let friends go see the Ghostbusters remake.
This is honestly going to end friendships.
Well, what did I said the top three things that can be the reasoning for ending friendships in 2016. Politics, your stance on the whole Black Lives Matters movement,
mm-hmm.
and what your thoughts on the Ghostbusters remake were.
That's very accurate. And I know people are going to probably comment and say, like, oh, I was being too hard on it and this and that. I can't be harder on it. I would be not doing my fucking job if I wasn't vilifying it for what it is. And that is a cinematic abortion. Right. It's the equivalent of cancer for your eyes. Like, well, I mean, cinematic cancer.
Oh, okay.
Because I know you can get eye cancer, but...
Yeah.
But, like, it's like watching cancer grow on your eyes. I think I'm ready to move on, and now that I know how terrible it is, and that I was right, I feel justified in all the hate that I've given this movie now, because it absolutely deserved it from the get-go, because everything that was wrong with it, that could have possibly gone wrong with it, was. So, I was right. I'll say that right now. Everything I said for the last year and a half, I was right. Except with the exception of Leslie Jones, that I will take as being wrong about.
You're a big man.
Yeah, I will take back what I said about Leslie Jones, because she ends up being one of the few points of this movie that I could honestly say was decent. Everything else was dog shit. All right. Well, now let's go get the shovels.
Yeah.
And let's bury this.
Yep.
Let's put it to bed.
So
and hope that it doesn't form a ghost of a sequel that'll haunt us for another year and a half.
Yep.
Parting words.
No.
Let's just cry. Get it out of our systems. And we're going to be stronger. We're going to be stronger in this world.
Yep.
Honestly, this is going to join the likes of movies like the Total Recall remake and the where they just kind of disappear out of people's memories after a while.
That'd be nice.
I think most people forgot that Total Recall even got a remake at this point.
I didn't remember it until I was reading the article about the Warriors TV show, and they said how, you know, a remake wouldn't be like that. It wouldn't be ridiculous like that.
No. All right, so you've been warned. We did what we had to do, and there's no turning back now. So, twoangryguys.com, angryguyspodcast@gmail.com, alcohol, AOKHAL for me on the Twitter, twoangryguys on Twitter.
Twoangryguyspodcast on Instagram. I'm just Brett on Instagram. And we'll see you next week.
We're gonna go piss on the ashes and move on to better things. What the fuck, really?
We're turning the page, John. We're on to bigger and better things now.
All right, for us at Two Angry Guys, we'll catch you on the other side. And I mean, not in the ghost world. I mean, on the other side of life. We're going to turn the page. The girl you knew the night before.
But your thoughts will soon be wandering the way they always do. When you're riding 16 hours, there's nothing much to do. And you don't feel much like riding, you just wish the trip was through.
You don't want to stay for the after credits?
No. Wait, is there?
Yeah, there really is.
No. What is it? What is it?